You are listening to Strategy of Finance Clips, our short-form, topic-based content. Let's dive in. Let's move on to maybe a masterclass on strategy. The general, I would say, uninformed perception is this is perhaps the best job ever, right? You talk to people internally, you talk to people externally, and then you turn around and pontificate what should be done without any burden of execution, right? So maybe unpack that for us in the context of what is strategy to you?
Happy to do that. And yeah, it's so funny. Strategy is this word that gets thrown around and means so many things in every company, even within the same company. You know, there's no real consistency that I've seen around it. I'll tell you a few of the things I've seen it mean, and you know, maybe have an opinion on what I think it should mean and how people should think about it. For one, everybody these days likes to put strategy in their title just because they think it's glamorous and it's like the senior thing to do is to be strategic, right? And that's something that I think management is perpetuating, whether they mean to or not. I know throughout my whole career, I was told, you know, like, need to be more strategic. You know, that's how you're going to get to, you know, X, Y, or Z level.
Our whole podcast is Strategy of Finance, right?
Yeah. So you're doing the same thing, right? I do think, though, that putting strategy in your title just for the sake of having it in there is a little bit dilutive to what strategy should be. And it also removes, in a way, the fact or the implication that all of the other teams that don't have strategy in their name shouldn't be strategic. And so, you know, another conversation I had with a CFO recently, which I thought it was a really great conversation, he had mentioned that, you know, for strategic finance, for example, or finance and strategy, as, you know, FP&A is often being rebranded these days, it is a little bit of a problem that, you know, we're moving to all of these like strategy names, because realistically, like every business unit, every team should be strategic. FP&A should be very strategic. HR should be strategic. You know, legal should be strategic. Like, you have to think about whether you're doing things that are for the benefit of the business versus just like operationally sound, and think about whether there's ways to innovate on how you're operating. And to me, those are the ways that strategy should find its way into most teams. I would argue that, you know, finance has an opportunity to be slightly more strategic than some teams by looking at the finances of the business. They can help the company make better strategy decisions, you know, overarching company strategy decisions. And so that's, you know, to me, what real strategy is. But maybe just taking a step back from that debate around words and, you know, talking a little bit about what strategy has meant to me and, you know, the career path that I've been on. Having been in roles with strategy in the title for, you know, 90% of my career, I found that typically the distinction when it's done right is that, you know, these strategic roles are roles in which you're actually connecting operations or finance to strategy versus, you know, getting to be the like hands-off, you know, person who speaks about how things should be and doesn't actually end up doing anything about it. I have seen a few instances of folks being true strategy folks. It's usually like the corporate strategy team, you know, someone who does not have operations also or finance also in their title, who does the real hands-off strategy stuff. There is, you know, I'll say a team at Stripe that is corporate strategy that talks just about like the strategy of the business and, you know, thinking about how other businesses are conducting their strategies and helping to kind of agitate the thought process around how the business should operate and what their strategy should be. So yeah, that's a little bit about it. I mean, I think it's the last thing I would say is for all of those folks out there, you know, who might be, you know, listening to this, watching this and thinking about, you know, their relationship with strategy, I think what's important is to be an influencer of strategy, not to have it in your title necessarily. You can do it from any function, you know, by being a leader in your space, helping to make decisions around how to operate and helping to support the company strategy and actually make the business more successful. you can appear and be more strategic and influential from a strategy perspective and ultimately drive value to the business. I don't think having it in your title is actually the key thing, nor is it usually a good excuse to not be hands-on with actually driving the business.
How do you segregate good strategy versus bad strategy? You know, as we discussed, it's such an amorphous, maybe a very big ticket umbrella word. How do you make it more tangible?
Strategy is good when it accomplishes something for the business, and it's bad when it doesn't, right? And that's like the most fundamental thing. To know what's a good strategy, I mean, first of all, it needs to be a well-formed strategy, and that's, you know, a little bit separate from it being the right strategy. But I'd say a well-formed strategy is one that is comprehensive and actionable and communicable. You know, so there's a lot of strategies out there. There are things like, you know, go big on enterprise. You know, it's like a very, very common strategy. I've been in a lot of companies where, you know, that was the strategy or was part of the strategy. And that's fine for that to be the headline. But there needs to be a lot underneath that around what that actually means. And so this is where that connectivity of strategy to operations comes in. And they're somewhat seamless, right? They need to be interconnected. Because a strategy like go big on enterprise that doesn't articulate like what product, what features of the product, who's building it, what the time frame is, how we're measuring it, none of that, with none of that in place, you're not actually able to go action on that. Or too many people are going to action on it, you know, or no one's going to action on it, even though they could. Like there's just, if you're not going to see the results you want. And I see that actually coming back to one of our earlier topics as one of the most important capabilities of a FP&A or strategic finance team. It's to be at that intersection of the strategy that, you know, the CEO might have in mind, which is, hey, we got to go after enterprise. And like, you know, guys, can you all go and, you know, work on getting us to be successful in the enterprise, and connecting that to the financial realities of why are we doing that? Let's double check that this makes sense. Okay, like makes sense. Then what does it mean financially? Let's plan for that. And then all of the operations that are going to ladder up to making that effective. And finally, the communication around all of those operations. The communication piece of it and some of the operational pieces of it can fall a little bit outside of the finance spectrum. But connecting those dots, seeing where there's problems, seeing where there's misses, and then pulling in the right teams to make sure that the right things get done at the right times can be an incredibly powerful motion, and is where the like strategy portion of a strategic finance team's name really comes into play.
Makes sense. As we discussed, there are so many different types of strategies, right? Because it could be business strategy, product strategy, go-to-market strategy, finance strategy, people strategy, like every single function could have, you know, their own strategies, if you will. How should one think about the role of the strategy leader? What all should it cover, not cover? Are there kind of certain best practices that you have seen that kind of make sense to put under the purview of the strategy leader?
I've seen it done a few different ways. We had, for example, a chief strategy officer at ClickUp. And his role ended up being very focused on company strategy and then also equally focused on the partnerships organization. This is before I took over that team. And I would say that, candidly, I don't know that that was the right setup. I think it's important that strategy leaders have a purview over parts of the business that are, you know, most strategic. And so partnerships is one of those, absolutely. And, you know, it would make sense to have that there. He also had corporate development. And so, you know, mergers and acquisitions type responsibilities, which are very strategic. But the challenge that we saw there is that he was not a product strategy leader. And I think it's important for folks in finance and in any function to recognize that, I mean, there's a few pillars of strategy. Like one is like the corporate strategy of, you know, things like, you know, mergers and acquisitions. And then there's the go-to-market strategy, which encompasses partnerships to some extent. Really, partnerships can be in all parts of strategy. And then, you know, a number of other elements of go-to-market strategy, like what is our marketing strategy? Who are we marketing to? What is our ideal customer profile? What are the channels we're going to go after? the sales strategy of, are we hiring senior enterprise reps? Are we going to do more of a self-service motion? There's some key elements there. But product strategy is the piece that really makes or breaks the company over the long term. And I think as a finance person, I find it's easy to get enamored with the go-to-market side because it feels like a math problem and it's like very logical and actionable. You know, you put in reps that cost X, Y, and Z amounts, and you get out X, Y, and Z revenue, and you can have a capacity model that tells you how many reps you need for how many bookings. And it just like feels like this cool like machine. And it you know, it's considered glamorous as well as a part of the business to work on. Whereas product for a finance person is often not quite as glamorous because you're more just looking at headcount and maybe categorizing people. You do some reporting. You know, it's a different type of work a lot of the time. But that's not how actual strategy in the business should work. You know, product strategy should lead everything else from a business strategy perspective. And I would say the best finance professionals can find themselves in the product strategy sphere if they get into some of those same things that I mentioned earlier. You know, I had delved into with my partner at Zendesk. Around, what are those products that we're building? What are the pricing and packaging scenarios we can have around those, the adoption scenarios? And then, even talking a little bit about like the features and understanding the market well enough to understand the TAM and the upsell opportunities, the cross-sell opportunities that you're creating, that becomes highly strategic and revenue-oriented instead of just headcount and cost-oriented on the product side. So I'm kind of mashing together, two realms of strategy, one being the like centralized chief strategy officer, head of corporate strategy type role, and the other being more, on that financial strategy side. But ultimately, I think one of the most important things for both of them is to think more about product sales and product building opportunities and the resourcing and staffing around products to make that engine effective. And the go-to-market engine needs a lot of attention too. Finances is a huge part of that, but it ultimately comes after. You know, without the right products, there's no reason to hire salespeople. You know, you're not going to get the demand that you need to actually sell into.
Different people who are ultimately impacting strategy are sitting in various different parts of the business overall, right? Is there a thesis around having a separate strategy team altogether within a company? What are your thoughts around that? Does it even make sense to have such kind of a structure, or is it just something more that maybe there is one or two individuals who are in that team and then the rest of the folks have a dotted line into them?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's an interesting reality in business that the more skills you try to cram into one individual, the more expensive that individual is going to be, the more rare they're going to be, or the worse that they're going to be at all of those things, And so I think that it's a constant challenge, a trade-off challenge, because ideally you have a business full of high achievers who can do everything and work together super well, right? But that's just not the reality. And so then some people, I think, pivot towards this idea of, okay, let's have specialists for every one little thing, and then they'll be amazing. Everyone's going to be amazing at something, and then we'll just find ways to get them all to work well together and coordinate well. That actually doesn't work that well either. The right answer is somewhere in between. You need to have some people who kind of span everything and then find ways to centralize the right things and decentralize and specialize the right things. I think that strategy is probably one of those things that needs to be a little bit spread throughout the company, because to be an incredible product strategist or an incredible go-to-market strategist, you have to be just steeped in that line of work. You really need to understand the realities on the ground, the operational realities. It's going to help to have been a sales rep or to have known and worked with a lot of sales reps to be a go-to-market strategist, just to like really know their pain points, their capabilities, their opportunities, and to know like the selling of the product and what's possible, and know the product well. And that's where you start to see like a little bit of the synergy, I would say, in being more of a diversified strategist and like, okay, well, what if you're a really good product strategist and you're a really good go-to-market strategist? Then you're going to have this ability to actually say, I know our product so well, and I know our sales team so well, or like our opportunities on both sides, that I can now, you know, interweave the two and really advise optimally across the company. But what I would say is that then becomes such a rare and hard to find skill set that usually that person that can do both of those things is like the president or CEO, or, you know, someone extremely senior in the organization, if they're going to do both of those things very well. And so, yeah, technically strategy is centralized, you know, it all rolls up to the CEO. And so I think it, like, you kind of should have embedded strategic teams and have a touch point in the senior levels of the company, whether that is a chief strategy officer, whether it's a CEO, CFO, you know, there's a few folks that, you know, sometimes have accumulated a lot of knowledge in multiple parts of the business, and have them be sort of the consolidator, the one who synthesizes all of that strategic thought process across the business and helps to make sure that something coherent comes out the other side as the actual business strategy, consolidated business strategy. I guess I'll share one thing that might be interesting for folks, which is how Stripe handles this, actually. So we just got through the planning process for Stripe and for this year, for 2024. We just locked the plan. And there was one person who held the pen, so to speak, of the strategy. She's a very senior business leader. She's been with Stripe for like 9 years. She's brilliant and absolutely amazing. And is really, you know, on that product and engineering side, actually. But she's well-connected, experienced, and has the relationships to the extent that she needs to be able to understand everything across the business. So she's able to hear what the senior operations leader says, hear what the, you know, CRO and the CMO are saying, and also knows front and back the product and engineering side of the house. And so she is just the writer. She's still not the decider, but she's like a synthesizer across the entire business, and help to pull the great minds that were specialized in strategy across each of those business areas together where needed to say, I think what you're saying, you know, could benefit this person to hear, or I think what you're saying might be different than what this person is saying. You should talk to them, and helped pull together a set of, you know, OKRs for the business and a strategy write-up. It was literally a long form narrative of strategy across all the different business areas that just articulates what everybody is doing in kind of a cohesive way. So a lot of companies are going to lack the, like, people and infrastructure to do it that way. You know, Stripe has a lot of, again, really brilliant people. It's a very established company now. But to the extent that you can pursue a process like that, I think it was incredibly valuable to have the synthesizer, have the person to pull stuff together. Again, it's going to be one of your most senior people at the top of the company, and then have those functional teams that are, you know, brilliant in their own areas to help pull things together on that side.
That's amazing. I wonder, what are the OKRs for this person who is the synthesizer, who is the, you know, who holds the pen on the strategy side? Because arguably she's influencing a lot, but again, she may not be the throat to choke for anything that may or may not have happened.
Yep. Yeah, that was the nature of the arrangement in the way that she handled this, in that she knows a lot and is well connected to everything, but she's not actually the owner of any of these things, almost. But, you know, in this particular case, she actually did own a business area also. And so she actually left the process with her own set of OKRs that were for, like, her business area. But she didn't own anything else, even though she was partnering with all of these other executives and wrote everything kind of with them and helped, you know, synthesize and make sure it all was the right set of things to document. Ultimately, like, she doesn't have accountability around any of it except her own, you know, piece of the world. And I think that's the way you have to do it. I think the role of that person at that level is to help build the right set of interconnected relationships and, dependencies and the understanding of dependencies that allows all of those people to then come out of the process and feel like, even though someone else synthesized and wrote everything kind of with them, for them, you know, alongside them, they're still the owners. You know, and that was really, you know, part of the art of being that synthesizer and that person, you know, at the intersection of all things, that she didn't make everybody feel like, you know, even though she called some shots on like, hey, you're this OKR, it's not going to work. You know, it's too complicated, or it overlaps with that person's, or there's too many, so you got to get rid of it, or whatever. Everybody still came out of the process saying like, that's fine. Like, what's there is still mine. Like, nothing happened in this process that made me feel like I lost, you know, control over this being my set of metrics. So everything kind of has to be discussed and justified along the way. It's an expensive process, you know, getting to that level of alignment. There's a lot of conversation, relationship building that's required to get there. But to the extent as possible, I think it's the right way to enter the year with the right aligned set of goals and discussions across the business.
Makes sense. One of the questions that I wanted to ask is, who should, you know, strategy folks report to, whether it's CEO, CFO, COO, CPO? But it sounds like in one of the prior responses, you kind of mentioned that whoever has the broadest purview is the best person to have that strategy team, right? Is that the best way to summarize it?
Yeah, I would say that is one of the key elements, one of the key criteria. I've seen a few things work, though. So it's interesting. And I think it actually depends maybe a little bit less on like purview per se. And it's almost like whoever has the broadest and deepest strategic experience is probably the right person. And so I've seen that be different people at different companies. At Zendesk, we had, for example, for a long time, a CFO, Elena Gomez, who was just incredibly good at understanding how each of the different business units should be operated, like both strategy and operations, and of course, financials of all of the different parts of the company. And so she was just like a force of nature within the company. Like any team that she worked with would like look to her almost for like guidance and like, you know, respected her opinion on their own areas. You know, she was kind of like the pinnacle of a finance business partner. And she, you know, had come to that from being a career strategic finance person. So she was a senior strategic finance person at Schwab, I believe it was, and then Salesforce. And then at Zendesk, she was CFO. And so I think that that's like a perfect example of the kind of person that has done the rounds, understood all the different parts of the business, and can connect the dots of the different like types of strategy across the business to create something really strong and cohesive. If you look at ClickUp, I think it was a little bit less clear, you know, who that person was, but we ended up having someone who was our chief business officer, who was ultimately the most logical person because he's very strategy oriented and he had been a big part of hiring up all the different parts of the company. He was one of the co-founders. And so he was the right kind of well-connected, tenured person to synthesize all of that. Tenure is important too, because of course, like, you can be great at strategy of all different varieties, but if you don't have all the relationships and you don't have all the context of the company you're at, then that's going to be problematic for this type of work. And then again, with the Stripe example, it's someone who is very senior. You know, you might put her in the top 40 most senior people in the company, but she's also not the CFO, president, CEO. She's just a extremely tenured, extremely smart, you know, well-rounded individual who had a lot of great relationships that she was able to use to help synthesize this. So yeah, it depends on a few factors.
Very interesting perspective. How does data and technology kind of broadly shaping the world of strategy?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important to leverage data and technology wherever you can, right? I mean, I think everybody kind of knows that these days, you know, that we should try to you know, leverage it where we can. I think where it's been influential in my experience in, you know, potentially unorthodox ways or in lesser known ways is in really giving you like competitive research, you know, because something that, like, just to name a dynamic that's out there, a lot of senior executives these days will kind of use, you know, hearsay of like, you know, I talked to this executive at this company and he's doing this, and so maybe we should do that. And, you know, I heard that this metric is this, that company. And so, you know, we're behind and we've got to improve that metric. And I think there's a lot of value to that, but I also think it can be actually damaging if it's used the wrong way. Using technology, the right kind of benchmarking, you know, tools, using the right sort of platforms for pulling together lots of different data points and being able to compare them, even if that's just like a project management tool. Basically, being able to use whatever means you have to actually amass a lot of data and compare all of that data instead of just leaning too hard on one non-statistically significant data point that might be influencing your thought process. Otherwise, you'll end up, you know, I've had this example at ClickUp, won't name, you know, exactly the people and the dynamics, but there were cases where folks were recommending things that, like, you know, ServiceNow were doing, for example. And I was, you know, just like, you know, ClickUp is not ServiceNow, you know, like, we could not be much different from ServiceNow. They're a, like, 100% enterprise, you know, over $100 billion company with an incredibly sophisticated piece of software on, like, a different pricing model. Like, it just is not, you know, comparative at all to our situation. And so if you're, you know, going to try to make strategic decisions for the business by just copying them in a vacuum, you're probably going to make the wrong ones, you know? So, you know, using data and technology to get the right information, to understand the characteristics of different businesses, look at the results of those different businesses, look at the inputs in those different businesses, and then bring all that information together to influence what we should do. I'll add one other thing to that, which is kind of going on a tangent, but this idea of, like, first principles, I think, is really important. Something that has been popularized by folks like Elon Musk, you know, the idea that you can copy what other people are doing, you can use processes and technology that's already there, and, like, in some cases, sure, you shouldn't reinvent the wheel, but you also can accomplish something extraordinary and can only really accomplish something extraordinary if you do try to reinvent the wheel, or at least, like, re-examine the wheel, right? You're not going to have a better wheel than someone else by much if you start with their wheel and then you tweak it. You know, you have to actually consider exactly how you want to move or whatever you're trying to accomplish with the wheel, and then think of what the best thing is going to be. And of course, the Elon Musk example is, you know, with cars and its batteries and, you know, things like that for the cars that he ended up making. People said, oh, you can only get a car, whatever, 50 miles on a charge. And he created a battery that takes cars hundreds of miles on a charge and delivers a lot of power much faster and makes his cars much faster. And, you know, people just, like, didn't think that could be done. They assumed, like, people had innovated the hell out of batteries and there was not going to be any more innovation that was going to be done for car batteries that was going to, you know, significantly move the needle and change the paradigm. All of that, again, as a tangent, just to say, you know, copying other businesses, doing benchmarking and using that to make decisions, one, can be harmful if you don't use the right data and technology to, you know, make those decisions in a good way. But also, you know, even if you're going to collect that information, regardless of whether you collect that information, you should also take a step back and consider the principles of the decision that you're trying to make strategically. What are we actually trying to accomplish? How do we want to accomplish it? What needs to be true once we've, you know, made the strategic decision and we see the outcome of the strategic decision? And then how does that influence the decision that we're going to make?
Makes a ton of sense. Last question in this masterclass on strategy. As one is trying to build a team around, you know, or build a strategy team, what kind of capabilities should one look to bring in? And would you always bring in someone from a functional team or rather kind of hire from outside?
I have always been a big fan of internal mobility. I've personally benefited a lot from internal mobility. So I think it's incredibly important that businesses prioritize internal mobility whenever they can. The reasons aren't just, you know, because I benefit from it, but because, like, the same benefits that I've derived from it are what have made me more effective in contributing to the companies that I've worked for. It helps increase tenure. If you have internal mobility, it's much more likely that you're going to be able to, you know, both learn more and do better, but also feel like you have a career at that company that's worth continuing to maintain. You know, why leave to another business to take on a new role, to do a new thing when you can just do it internally, you know, and continue your career in the same company without having to remake all your relationships and learn completely new contexts? You can kind of learn iteratively versus, you know, completely changing everything all at once. Big fan of internal mobility generally. I think you have to, you know, consider still, you know, obviously you can't just always hire internally. you have to make that same call I was talking about earlier around, could we hire someone better externally versus this person who is internal for this position? And with strategy, it can come down to a lot of different factors. You know, it's a little bit different than doing, you know, budget versus actual reporting, right? If you're trying to do budget versus actual reporting, it's pretty cut and dried. Like, is someone on the team good enough for that? Should we promote them into the role, let them transfer into the role, and give them that growth opportunity? Or are we just going to be way better off hiring someone else externally? If it's strategy, it isn't just about being good or bad at strategy. You know, it can be about bringing new perspectives. Sometimes for strategy, it's really valuable to bring in someone who's had a diverse set of experiences across different business models, different region segments, you know, whatever it might be that's sort of relevant to the space you're in, or someone who's just seen great. You know, like maybe they're not even the most provocative, you know, like the thought-provoking, brilliant imaginer of new things, but maybe they've worked in strategy at a company that does things incredibly well, and you just really want to do a lot of things more like that company. And we had that experience at Zendesk in multiple business areas with Salesforce folks. Zendesk was a little bit of like a Salesforce shop, which is ironic because they were like our main competitor. We ended up pulling over tons of folks, you know, including Elena, including a lot of like her team and folks she brought over. And, you know, we really just felt that Salesforce had nailed it with the go-to-market motion and that their, you know, products, of course, were like innovative and well-loved. And so like, we copied a lot and we pulled over a lot of folks that allowed us to copy those things in an effective way. I think maybe that, you know, you can make an argument that we didn't always pursue the first principles mindset as much as we should have, actually. And we, you know, perhaps at times without thinking through it very rigorously, just copied Salesforce. But for Zendesk, that often worked pretty well because our products were so similar. We're literally selling the same things that it was hard to copy something and have it not be a good idea when Salesforce had obviously thought through so many things so thoroughly. So that's the main, you know, kind of set of trade-offs I would consider.
Subscribe channel for more amazing content.